This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 10. It wasn't as good as I thought. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Laver sees an incredible catch. Or does he? Find out in the show. We also talk about teaching techniques, helping a batsman who's good in nets but struggling in the middle, and have a look at a spin bowler's action to see if we can help him improve. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to cricket coaching or cricket playing, wherever you are and whoever you are. We're here to give you a hand for the next half an hour or so. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm watching some tennis to my left-hand side, and I'm watching some cricket nets to my right-hand side. And it's March. I love it.
Well, how about that? It's earliest summer on record, obviously.
It is. Well, I wouldn't go as far as summer, but it's dry.
That's summer. I'm calling that a summer.
You're in Scotland. That is dry. That is the summer for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get outside quick. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. How's things up there?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, tentatively getting outside and making the transition from outdoors to indoors is always a fun thing. Someone had a bowl yesterday on the square, and he said it feels like I'm bowling in glue because I've gone from such a hard concrete surface to this not quite ready for cricket field.
And the key question is, has the groundsman shouted at anyone yet?
No, fortunately not. No, we've managed to sneak past him every time so far. We've turned up with the doors locked a few times, but we've just gone in through a hole in the fence, so there's no stopping us. Now, I wanted to talk about a little bit this week about something that I saw in a recent ECB CA manual, yearbook, that came out. And I saw that it got some criticism, a little bit of criticism on Twitter. And it was about using sort of academic models of coaching people compared to, I suppose, the trial and error model of going into the nets and trying things with people and seeing what works for you with them and sort of being a bit more, well, you know, in the trenches, if you like. The ECB booklet had a couple of different sort of models that were picked from scientific research. One was called 5A and one was called Right Way, Wrong Way. And they were both criticised basically on Twitter as sort of scientific mumbo jumbo. And the implication was that, you know, the real way to get people to learn is don't worry about all the theory, just get into the nets and get practicing. So I thought that'd be a great point to discuss. How much do you rely on kind of these models, these theories, and how much do you rely on something a bit more instinctive and a bit more sort of, we'll try things and see what happens?
Well, I don't think it should be either, really, in terms of relying on a theory. I think probably if I was to go one way, it would be more trial and error. But I would think that would also not be reflective of my coaching, really, because over the years I've been exposed to a lot of these concepts, a lot of these research papers. And what I find every time I read a research paper is, whilst you can pick holes in it and you can be critical, as obviously has happened on the internet here, it also brings up a two or three things that you naturally do within your coaching anyway, because it's based on real coaching around the world, or in fact it's something that comes up which says, actually, if I added that to my coaching practice, it might be useful. So I think anything that you read with, how can I use this, is it relevant, how can I use it, and which bit of it can I use? And that should be the same whether you're reading a document about how Brendan McCullum plays 2020 cricket or how Chris Gayle goes about it, as much as it is about how you should go about your coaching. You read it and go, which bit of that is relevant? Which bit can I work with? What does it mean to me? And that's the way whenever I read anything or hear anything, I take it on board. And it stood me in relatively good stead, I think.
Leifus, how much do you look into sort of the academic, the theory side of things, and how much do you find yourself using?
I think it's always quite interesting to read what people have written, or what the work that's going on, and it maybe is reaffirming things that are already out there and ideas or theories that are already being used, and it may be just trying to justify them a little bit further, or maybe it's breaking new ground and it's something that's going to be a new string to your bow. But I think exposing yourself to different ideas and reading different people's opinions and then putting yourself in a position where you can effectively judge whether or not, or how much or how little you want to use them, is a pretty good place to put yourself in, rather than closing the door on things and saying that they don't work or these things aren't for me. Just opening your eyes and having a little bit of awareness of there are different models out there, there are different things, and people are constantly coming up with new plans, new techniques, new initiatives that could be useful. I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to. As Gareth said, it's then applying it to yourself and your own experience as a coach and the groups or the individuals you're working with to apply the information that's then relevant.
I suppose what you don't want to do is to quickly turn around, have a new idea, think to yourself, well, that doesn't fit my way of thinking, so it must be wrong, so I'm just going to poo-poo it immediately because it's not something which is of interest to me. I guess if you get into that mindset, you're closing yourself off to something that potentially could be good. You might be right, but you don't know unless you are open to it.
I think that's spot on, mate. And one of the things that we do, we have a Monday afternoon meeting in my department, and somebody has to bring something to the table and then we discuss it. So the other week, for example, there's a guy called Bondacek. It's a way do you train, way you go about training sessions and how to structure them and how to program them and what have you. And I got Dan Hellesvay, one of our coaches, to read this book, which is absolutely massive, and then pick out some key principles that he read in there that he thought were worthy of discussion around how you should finish sessions, how you should build a session up, what you should do at each phase. And we basically went through it and said, okay, how does this relate to cricket? How does this relate to what we do? And I reckon out of the 14 principles, which Dan narrowed it down to, we've taken on 6 and incorporated that into our practice on a more consistent basis than we were before. We haven't dismissed the whole thing. We dismissed some of the things as maybe not being relevant to cricket or the way that we work here at Millfield. But the other things have just sort of heightened our awareness a little bit. And it certainly makes us question our own practice and maybe even review slightly differently. And so, you know, what have we got, 6 out of 14 things there? You know, if I can get 6 points or even 1 point out of a document that helps me to get better, then that's got to be useful. But to take something on verbatim or to dismiss something on verbatim, I think is probably a bit short-sighted.
Okay, Gareth, so you've got to give us one of those 6 now. You can't dangle that carrot without giving us one of them.
Okay, so one of the ones that we've done is that a lot of the time we do skill development within a session. So you might be, for example, working on some short ball stuff or playing off a back foot against spin. And you can do that with a number of drills, whether it be tennis ball or bowling machine or whatever the case may be. But you should always finish the session having applied that into a realistic situation. So getting bowlers to bowl at you or simulating exactly what you're going to get out in the middle. And then if you do that training session enough, you should see an increase in effectiveness over the course of those little scenarios or those putting a bowler against a batter as the sessions go on and on and on. So a real basic thing that most people are probably doing, but I also think back to some of my sessions where maybe we just kept doing the drills or whatever and then practicing it in 4 weeks and expecting a change. You should be testing that every single time, maybe in the last 5 minutes of each session. The other thing is, can you do, the other gem that we've got is, you know, if you're working with 2 players and obviously if you've got a bowling machine going or you're throwing at somebody, then the other person is static and passive at that point in time. You know, can you incorporate another element that they can go off to and practice self-reliantly at the same time? So if you've got 3 minutes with somebody, then they can be using that 3 minutes wisely rather than just waiting their turn. There you go. So there's 2 bits of stuff that come out of Bondacek that have made an impact on us, because sometimes we did it and sometimes we don't. We now do it all the time.
I got one. It actually came from long before I knew about it, but I learned about this idea called peak end rule, where you remember things that happen at the end of a coaching session,
yep,
more than you do at the beginning or in the middle. So I long ago I was told always finish on a good one. So and then I learned about PKN rules. So now I've kind of made it a rule that unless someone's completely going wrong, always finish on a good one.
Mm.
So if it's a straight drive, make sure you get it out the middle. Okay, we're done. Let's go home. That works really well because it's just it does make you feel okay. That was good, even if it wasn't as good as you hoped it would be. If you finish on a good one, that works really well. Have you got any of those, Lavers?
No, off the top of my head. I just enjoy listening to them.
Lavers is one is if you haven't got anything to say, it's going to add value. Then don't say anything at all. And I think that's an absolutely spot on one. That's as good a bit of advice as you could ever hear.
But another piece of advice I'm going to give now, especially Lavers, is do say something in this next section because we definitely want a one-word answer from you because it's the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got them, so let's fire away. First question. Tactics are rarely wrong in the planning and often wrong in the execution.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Chase outcomes, not techniques.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. All failure is feedback. All success is confidence.
Yes.
No.
Time now for us to get some feedback from the listeners to the show or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website. It's the questions section where we have a couple of questions sent in. We do our best to answer them, and then we pick a winner. The best question of the week wins a prize that is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Wesley sent in a question, hopefully to win the prize, but certainly get it answered. So let's have a go at that now. He says, "Hi, I've recently been struggling with my batting out in the middle. In the nets, I see and play balls so well. But due to a lack of runs in games, I seem to lose confidence and can't see the ball like normal. I'm usually an attacking batsman and score fast, but I seem to freeze when batting in matches. Please help me." So that's interesting that he would say I'm not seeing the ball as well in the middle as I am in nets.
Yeah, I think it is interesting, actually, because he seems to have identified the kind of visual aspects of it, hasn't he? And he doesn't see the ball as well. I mean, this is something that you sometimes do get with batsmen where going from nets to going to an open field or going to from wearing a helmet or a hat to not wearing one just changes your focus and your kind of visual aspect of it. So whether or not that's actually what he's focusing on or not, I'm not sure. And it may just be the way he's written it and we're picking up on the wrong part of the sentence, or the emphasis is in the wrong part of the question, but that is something that can happen. So trying to just take his focus in and just reduce that vision, which is something we talked about a little bit before, of looking at a big picture and looking at a big area or trying to zone in, and different people kind of excel doing things in different ways. It may be that there are distractions out there, and maybe he's not gaining his focus visually as well as he might do in a net situation because of the environment around him. Obviously, with fielders around, maybe he's trying to make too many decisions at the same time, and he's trying too hard to focus on where he's hitting the ball as opposed to focusing on hitting the ball in the first place. So it might be a visual thing. Is that your initial interpretation of the question? Because I think probably it's for me is in the way I've read it.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. I think because he's specifically pointed out seeing the ball, I think that's his language, isn't it? He feels like there's something different between actually picking up the line and length of the ball, and that's causing him to not feel in a position to play aggressively.
Well, given that, then I think it's trying to merge the two experiences together, and obviously one seems fairly successful in an environment where he's quite confident and where he feels relaxed and he's doing very well. So the more he can make that environment a little bit more match specific, the closer he's going to get towards developing confidence and applying himself successfully in a game scenario. And there are a number of ways he can do that. whether it be trying to have fields in play or trying to make decisions during a net, or we actually talked about one in a drill that we put out this week, didn't we, David, with some zoning to try and make people make decisions about where they're going to score runs. And it could be simply that the decisions he's having to make based on where the field is kind of clouding his judgment, and he's taking his focus away from the ball, and maybe just investing a little bit more time in looking at the ball and not being too concerned initially about the field and his matches, or trying to elevate the input of the field and the decision making into his nets, and hopefully the two will meet somewhere in the middle, and maybe that performance in the nets can translate onto the field. But I would suggest try to retain focus on the ball and try and think about focusing on that when you get into your match situation, but definitely in nets try and have a heightened awareness of a match situation and try and make that environment simulate. Oh my God, sorry, I've got to stop there. I've just seen a ridiculous catch on TV. Did anyone else see that?
Who is it?
Right, Pandiar has just pulled it. Sorry, if anyone's listening, I'm not sure if this gets edited in or out. He's just pulled it out to mid-wicket boundary, and one of the Bangladeshi boys has sprinted round, dived full length, probably 2 metres inside, and picked it off the floor, I'm guessing, half a foot off the floor, full length, left-handed.
Quality, loving it.
It was great.
Have a
anyway.
Look at that later.
I mean, I'm now worrying that he looks remarkably calm and cool about the fact he's just plucked a. Yeah, it wasn't as good as I thought. two hands dived afterwards. One for the cameras.
Needs editing that, Dave, I'm afraid.
Yeah, get rid of that.
Don't worry, Lavis. None of this will ever go out.
Fantastic. Same as always.
Well, Gareth, back to the question.
Well, I think to add to what Sam's talked about, it sounds to me as there's a very much of a different perceived threat, really, between the open situation where you're very, you know, you're being judged, aren't you? When you're out in a game of cricket, whereas opposed in a net situation, we're not. And I think you can do two things, really. You can work, just as Sam said, work on the nets at being more specific and ultimately have those nets every now and again. It doesn't have to be that everybody does it. When they're out. But you might want to say to the bowlers as you walk into bat, OK, if you get me out nicked off, if you get me LBW or bold, I go, or if I lob one up in the air, I go. So if you get me out first ball, that's the end of my practice. And then all of a sudden that heightens the pressure and the expectation around that practice. And that's a really valuable thing to do. And as I say, it's not always the coach that needs to set that up, because I've seen top quality players walk into a net and say to the bowlers, when you get me like this, that's the end of it. And then they've batted. I mean, Cookie's done it a couple of times in nets that I've been privileged enough to watch, where he's walked in and said to the net bowlers, not necessarily the England bowlers, but to the guys that are servicing the nets, that this is what he's going to do. And on one occasion, he's batted for, you know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes without getting out. And on another occasion, he lasted 15 minutes and then nicked off and then walked off. But he put himself under the same pressure in terms of batting out in the middle as to batting in a net. And what he didn't do was go shotless. He went and just did exactly what he does when he plays out in the middle. And I think that's crucial. So you can set up all of the zones and stuff, which is really, really valuable. But the bottom line is, what I'm reading this is that there's a perceived different threat playing in matches than there is in a net situation. And the other thing that I'll say, and I've said it countless times on this show, is that dismissal is a part of cricket. And if you are a top order batter and you walk into bat, and it goes back to a conversation I had with Kevin Peterson back in 2007, where I said to him, you know, why do you go so well? Why do you, you know, just enjoy what you're doing so much? And he said, because there's no point in fearing getting out. Because as a top order batter, I walk into the middle and there's a 94% chance that I'm going to walk back again after being dismissed. So why should I be worried about that? And then I look at the top performers in the world now, and the top performers I consider to be somebody like a Steve Smith, somebody like an AB de Villiers, somebody like a Joe Root, and they love everything that they're doing out in the middle. And even when they get out, whilst they're disappointed, just like we're all disappointed when we've got out, they also don't look as if it's the complete end of their world. They almost smile sometimes when they get out. Okay, they learn from the experience, but they're not fearful of that dismissal, because it's all about what you do before you get dismissed, not about the dismissal itself. And it sounds to me that you've got a different mindset and a different fear of failure when you go into a net as to when you go out to the middle. Ultimately, what's the worst thing that can happen when you go out the back? You can get out. Jeffrey Boycott would kill me for saying that. But hey, that is life, because most of the time that does happen. It's about what you do before you get that fateful ball that goes into somebody's hands or an umpire's finger going up that matters.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And I was going to say exactly that as well, guys, because KP said that in the pitchers and course that he did as well. It's exactly
yeah,
the
that's
same
right.
Thing.
Yeah.
And it's not. Sometimes when you hear players say things, you often think, well, do you actually believe that, or is that something that you just say? But I absolutely believed, you know, the way that he said it, you know, the relaxed manner that he said it. It was just a fact. It wasn't something that he said to himself to G himself up. It was just a fact of the matter. Well, I'm going to get out anyway, so I might as well enjoy it while I'm there. And you know, that's a message that I often give to players as well, as you know, enjoy it, because you know, whether you're out there for two balls or whether you're out there for 200 balls, you know, you've got to enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point?
I'm a huge believer, and the most dangerous time that Paul Collingwood, who wasn't noted for being the most aesthetically pleasing batter in the world, apologies for that, Collie, but you weren't. you know, he said during his most successful period in international cricket, where he could literally not do anything wrong, he just got to a stage of his career where he just sort of sod it. You know, I'm just going to go out there and have a bit of fun, and I'm going to see what I can do before I get out, because I'm going to get out more often than not. And he stopped fearing that failure which is associated with dismissal. And it made the world of difference to him.
I think that's something that 2020 has been brilliant at, is that it's probably freed a few people up. And there are some people whose method and kind of impact and maybe their whole careers changed because they've been told it almost doesn't matter. Obviously, it matters to a degree if you get out, but they've been told that the expectation is that you take more risk, go for it, see what happens. And suddenly people are realising there's this whole new world of batting or this whole different side to them that maybe they didn't show, or maybe they didn't even understand that they had. And it's one of the great benefits that 2020 cricket's bringing to the game.
Next question is from Nick. And Nick says, I would like for you guys to take a look at my action and identify some things I need to improve on. My coaches say that my aiming arm is not really active and I need to be higher. They also say that my follow-through is more like a fast bowler and not a spinner. I also bowl too full as a spinner. Can you help me? So he's provided a link to a video. So what do we think?
Yeah, look, thanks for the video. And firstly, you've got some good things going on there, Nick. You know, so I don't think it's going to take a lot to get you to perform at an even better level than you are already. What we don't get to see is the outcome. And certainly we haven't got a sense of that, and you'll be a far better judge of that. But it sounds that you've identified, or your coach has identified, that you are bowling slightly too full. I suppose one of the things that, you know, if we go really back to basics, that often makes spinners bowl fuller. I'm not saying too full, but bowl fuller is when they've got a run-up pace which can be a little bit too fast at times. Certainly in some experiments that I've done with spin bowlers who generally under-pitch rather than over-pitch, I've encouraged them to increase their approach pace to the pitch in order to get the ball to go naturally fuller without them having to force the ball. And that's had an effect. So if you turn that on its head and you are bowling too full, then you might want to experiment with just having a slightly slower approach to the wicket and see what effect that has. So that would be really back to basics, but always a good place to start. In terms of your front arm, I can sort of see what they're saying, but again, it's not a deal breaker for me, depending on the outcome. And yes, you could experiment again with having a higher front arm, so I can see where they're coming from on that. But there are other strong bits about your action that that I think are great, and you might want to have a little look at that. But again, it wouldn't be a deal breaker as long as you're landing the ball in the right place and getting that ball to spin, which is the most important thing for for any spinner. In terms of your follow-through, I think your follow-through is a bit of a consequence of your run-up pace and the energy that you're producing in your run-up pace. So if you think about a fast bowler runs in faster than a spinner, so therefore has to follow through further, I think maybe if you adjust your run-up pace, then you might be able to reduce that follow-through a little bit. But ultimately, a follow-through is only there as a spinner to absorb all of the forces that you created at the crease and then prepare you for the opportunity of a ball coming back your way. Because as soon as you've let go of the ball and you've finished your arm circle, you're then becoming a fielder, and a very valuable fielder. And I just wonder whether you lose impact as a fielder as a result of not being able to be ready off your own bowling. You've got to be able to catch off your own bowling champion, and I'm sure you know that. So again, you might want to experiment with having a more conventional follow through finish position, that might be useful. But I do see a lot of spin bowlers when they bowl to a camera or when they're just doing their action follow through just like you, because they forget that in an actual game context or in a net context, the ball could come back at them at the rate of knots. So to me, it's run up pace, have a tinker with that. Yeah, I can see what they're saying around front arm, and again, have an experiment, see how that feels to yourself. But ultimately, if you're landing the ball in the right place and if you're getting it to spin, and you can make sure that you're a good fielder off your own bowling by being ready for that ball coming back, you're not going to go too far wrong.
Yeah, you do see that a bit more, don't you, Lavers? The front arm sort of dying away as the front foot lands. You tend to see that a bit more in spinners than you do in faster bowlers. I guess because the faster bowlers want to get every little bit of pace out and getting that arm in a stronger position.
Yeah,
that front foot contact is more important.
Yeah, fast bowlers obviously focused on speed development, I guess, and trying to bowl as fast as they can. So they're looking to try and make sure anything that is moving is generally working as hard as it possibly can be. And maybe spinners aren't necessarily in the same mindset. I know that if Terry Jenner was to have a look at it, the first thing he'd do is he'd turn your hand around. Because it often says you can't really push. You can't push with the back of your hand. You push with the front of your hand. So he'd probably want you to turn your hand around. For me, I don't think it's massively important. Although, again, something worth maybe trying. But I wouldn't say that's something that's going to be necessarily revolutionise your front arm or your action. I think the key thing that I've got to pick up on in the question really is that when you talk about your bowling, you've talked about your outcomes. So you say you bowl full and you've talked about how the ball lands. And when you've talked about what your coach has talked about the processes that are doing it. So maybe the chat that you need to have is with your coach and try and find somewhere you can meet in the middle, and his conversation about outcomes and about processes of front arms and how you're following through and your feelings about how you bowl could be combined. So you have a shared target of what you're actually trying to achieve. Because is it that you want to spin the ball more? Is it you want to bowl with more control, or you want to get more dip or bounce or whatever it could be? And once you've got that in your head, you can start thinking about what are the processes that are going to help me try and achieve that. So first, I'll be thinking, yes, I want to be better, but let's pinpoint where I want to be better. And once you've got an agreed goal of how you want to improve, start talking about what the process is that could have an impact. Because based on what we're seeing, the action looks pretty good. I completely agree with Gareth. I can see why your coach is saying that. It's not a powerful movement with that front arm, with the aiming arm, as you've called it, but the action's reasonably tidy. So it'd be good to see a little bit of a follow-up video at some stage from a different angle where we can see the actual delivery and maybe see three or four deliveries in a row and how they're reacting, and also get that kind of opinion from you on what it is you specifically want to improve on. You've mentioned length. You bowl a little bit full as a spinner. I guess
I'd like to know how he knows that as well, because often that's, you know, it's an impression you get. It's that peak end rule thing again, isn't it? It's the impression you get, but when you actually measure it, it's not quite the same. So it'd be interesting to see how that's measured. Does he get driven a lot, or what? You know, what's the indicator of whether he's bowling too full? I mean, it's easy to say, isn't it?
It may be. I mean, I've got a spinner who works with the school, and his opinion was actually that he bowled a bit too full. And actually, what it came down to was he didn't turn the ball enough.
There you go.
Because he's bowling pretty good length, but if you don't turn it, people can just hit straight back through you, and they can treat a ball that's kind of almost length as one that's actually almost a half volley. So, it'll be interesting to see where your kind of judgment or how your judgment has been made. And I'd like to see some videos of the actual outcome. And if you can get those in by Dropbox, either in one of the podcasts or just separately, we'll have a look at them. And it'd be good to see how the actual ball comes out and what kind of reaction you're getting off the surface.
Time now for the soapbox. That is 60 seconds on the clock. One of the members of the team gets to talk uninterrupted for a minute. This week it's Mark Garraway. Over to you, Garras.
I've had some really interesting discussions. It's that stage of the year now where you're doing your review of the winter period. And we get our county coaches on the phone, on Skype, or they come down and have a chat with us. And it's been really interesting to see how they go about talking to me and my other coaches about players that they've worked on, if they've got something that they would like them to work on that they don't think that we've covered. And it's the way that their body language shifts, but you know, that they sort of like sit back in their chair and they avert eye contact and, you know, start talking in 150 words about something that should take about 10 seconds to go through. And you know that they're feeling uncomfortable about bringing something up that they perceive as being something that I might take defensively or my coaches might take defensively. But the bottom line is that we never will. And every time they give us an option or an idea, then it's to help that person out. So when you are talking as a coach or as a player about other players, then don't be afraid to come out with stuff, because people will generally know if you're well-intentioned and you're trying to help, and they won't perceive it as being an attack. So that's the important thing.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, we do need to decide one more thing, which is the winner of this week's online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Wesley's question about struggling batting in the middle when he's doing well in nets. And we had Nick's question about improving his bowling technique. Which one did you prefer this week, Garris?
Well, I'm going to go with Wesley's this week because I wasn't a good net player, but then again, I wasn't any good in the middle either. So hopefully the advice that we've given is good enough for you, Wesley, and many others out there. It has certainly benefited me, I think, and I know working with a lot of young players that it would benefit them too.
Fabulous. Congratulations to you, Wesley. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted to send in their own question, get it answered and possibly win that prize for themselves, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543. And as the tractor drives off, they could give us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is right. Social media is around as well. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to this show every week. It's free and it comes out on Fridays. And you can download it onto your phone or whatever device you've got by going to your podcast app and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there pretty easily. And if you want to stream the show on the web, or you want to get the show notes or get old shows, you can do all that by going to pitchvision.com/academy, clicking on the podcast link to get all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garris. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, fellas.